another episode of Speaking the Lawn, the official podcast of StreakingTheLawn.com. Once again, my name is Pierce, and once again, I've got Ben with me to talk basketball. Ben, hello.
Hello. How are we doing today, Pierce?
We're doing
ready for
great.
Your Lions?
I'm ready for my Lions. I'm super interested to see when and how they'll crush me. But no, I feel like the Rams win was the great monkey off the back, and hopefully they keep winning, but I'm never going to depend upon that because they're the Lions. We'll see. Baker Mayfield, I mean, he beat your Eagles. He's pretty good, right?
That's true. He was slinging it, although so was Kyler Murray and Tommy DeVito and a whole lot of bad quarterbacks. But speaking of winning, Virginia Cavaliers,
whoa,
on their first winning streak of ACC play this year, above
nice.
500 in the conference, beat multiple technical institutes. On a roll.
Ag schools.
They're
they've got
rolling,
another
Pierce.
One, another ag school coming up, one they've already played, but that's the next game. NC State comes to town. Yeah, I mean, it's funny like that they decide to win a couple games, and we decide then to record. Here we are. But you know, Zach's been in Italy staying up late watching the games, and I don't know if he'll ever make it on a Zoom ever again, but we miss him, and we hope he stays off Twitter while he's in Italy, because I think those late nights in a different time zone, a different continent, have gotten to his Twitter content. What do you think?
I would agree. And I don't know, Zach has he's got a lot of bad takes, but no one can certainly accuse him of not watching the games, because that guy was up at 1 a.m. making memes of Tony Bennett in the Hulkbuster suit from Avengers Age of Ultron when I think we cut into the lead, but we're not yet winning, and tweeted it out, which you have to respect, because I believe he's 6 hours ahead of us. So
yikes.
He was like, this is late into the night, 1 a.m., 2
Dedicated.
a.m., delirious, probably pounding back the authentic espresso over there in Italy just to provide us with that sweet Twitter content.
And our man has
And
class.
Virginia rewarded him.
You know?
He did.
His loyalty to the program is shining through and leading to a rebound. I mean, if we're sort of resetting the ACC slate for the Hoos, right? They crush Syracuse, and then they play some more non-con. And then they come back to start with a blowout loss on the road to Notre Dame. And then they sort of string together like win at home, blowout loss on the road, win at home, blowout loss on the road, right? We're sort of left going,
yeah,
well, this isn't a tenable situation for a team that has, like, you know, NCAA tournament aspirations or top four in the conference aspirations, right? Like, you can beat Louisville, great, but you can't be blown out by NC State, Wake Forest, and certainly not Notre Dame on the road. So we're all going, what the hell's going on? Like, where is the team that we saw beat up on Texas A&M? Where is the team that we saw, you know, convert its three-pointers in a lot of these non-conference games and play the strong brand of defense that we've come to know and love over the last 15 years here? We saw more of that against Virginia Tech at home, and then they answered this big question mark about going on the road and actually repeating that type of success after a slow start in Atlanta, but of course turned it on, call it, you know, halfway through the first half, and came away with a really significant road win to stem a lot of the negativity about, you know, the program, where it's going. Is this an NIT season? You know, it very well could be still, of course, we don't know. But right now they find themselves technically in third, or a game out of second place behind a bunch of teams who are 5-2 in the ACC. And one of those teams is very beatable and coming to Charlottesville on Wednesday. So what, Ben, I mean, there's a couple obvious personnel answers to this, but I think the more important questions are, what strategically has changed for this team to hopefully carry some success at home? Like, what are they doing at home that's leading to these wins and then lacking on the road? And is that something we saw changed at Georgia Tech, where they actually did do it well on the road?
Yeah, I feel like the biggest difference home to road that we've seen this season has been the shot selection thing, particularly that Syracuse game where they just absolutely ran Syracuse off the floor 84 to 62 in the first home ACC game of the season. Virginia was just letting it fly from three. I think they finished, what, 12 for 21? But, and it's really just Isaac McNealy, especially, stood out in that game, 6 for 8, making tough deep shots. And I think that might be the winning formula for this team, looking at the way they beat Georgia Tech, the way they pulled away, particularly in the second half. But I think there's something to the whole team being willing to let it fly. One guy who stood out, who I wrote about postgame, was Reese Beekman, who is not a guy that we've seen hunt his shot from three in particular. The last night against Georgia Tech, they were clearly sort of keyed in on what sides typically looks like. And Reese was flaring out to the corner and like looking for corner threes in a way that we just haven't seen from him in most of his 4 years here. And he attempted 6 threes. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I bet that would be close to a season high, if not his highest mark of the season. He only made two of them, but just the fact that he was out hunting that shot assertively, I think the ugly offense that we're so accustomed to is the mid-range heavy, especially off the dribble, where it's guys like Rhodey, McNealy dribbling into them. I think they took 31 shots and they're 31 mid-range jumpers in their last road loss and made 8 of them, which just is not a winning formula. They aren't good shots and they're not particularly good at making them. They're better when they're sort of letting it fly. And I think sometimes they need to push it a little bit and semi-transition to get going. That's how McNealy was able to get his first few threes to fall yesterday. And he's a guy who I think is a big confident shooter. Once he sees one or two go in or gets confident in his ability to find space, it's almost those plays where he has it at the wing and the defender almost falls asleep and he'll just let it fly. And once he gets those, then you get to the deep threes, the one he hit from almost half court, and the one that he hit off that pass from Reese Beekman with about 40 seconds left to put Georgia Tech away yesterday. But schematically, I mean, that's the big thing is offensively. I think it manifests itself in the shot selection and the 3-point attempts, the mid-range attempts. But when you're watching visually, it's just where they're looking to get shots from. I think they just settle for mid-range jumpers quite a bit, especially on the road. I don't know if it has to do with the hostile crowds or what, but once they get down, I don't want to say they have like bad body language or hanging their heads or whatever, but they hadn't proven an ability to pull themselves out of a slump, at least in terms of execution. And I think sometimes they look like they're just going through the motions offensively, which is when you end up with those crappy mid-range jumpers off the dribble, which we've seen all too often. And then other teams start to get going. So it was nice to flip the script on that. And then the other big thing that popped up yesterday against Georgia Tech was the defense, which is if you look at the course of the whole game, they did allow 66 points, which isn't great against this Georgia Tech team, a Georgia Tech team that's barely in the top 100 for offensive efficiency. But they have some good players. And I thought Georgia Tech made some really tough shots in the first 5, 10 minutes and also down the stretch when they put together that little comeback.
For
But
sure.
that middle run, that 20-5 run to close the half, I think that was based almost entirely on playing great defense, forcing turnovers, forcing travels. And when they weren't doing that, they were making bad shooters take tough shots, which is that's the winning recipe on the road is defense and shooting. And they can keep that up, they'll be just fine.
Seemed like if they could avoid giving up wide open corner threes, they'd win by 50 too. It seemed to like keep Georgia Tech in the game was converting those. And I think that's something we've seen a lot this season. I was talking on Twitter about it that they seem to get crushed all the time by these swing passes to the opposite corner and it's wide open. I don't know if it's a this year thing or that's how the pack line works. If you're not playing it perfectly, kind of thing, it's probably a little bit of both. But for whatever reason, that seems to be the theme for other teams to attack. I mean, we saw it, saw the Hokies do it a number of times too.
Yeah, it was funny in the Virginia Tech game because it felt like possession for possession we were winning almost every time down, but then they just get a skip pass across the court and hang in it with another open three. I don't know if this like I haven't looked at this to confirm that it's true, but I do wonder if them playing more aggressive defensively and forcing more turnovers might be leading to that a little bit, just helping like over aggressively and trying to get tips, get deflections, force steals. I wonder if that could be leading to some of the breakdowns, or maybe it's just guys getting used to the system. They're playing either guys who will gamble or guys who are still learning the pack line, especially lately with Jordan Minor getting on the court.
Yeah, I mean, Miners, who I wanted to bring up next, for sure. And I think obviously it's new to see so many minor minutes and obviously, starting the game, and we saw it, addressed by Coach Bennett about putting him in at the end of the NC State blowout, and coaching him up, saying obviously the score doesn't matter. I want to see, production from you, and all the things that they go over as a team in practice, and your practices have been better, and all of a sudden those light bulbs come on for this guy who, we had high hopes for, based on the accolades he got as in his all conference awards last year. And we knew there was going to be a learning curve, but it seemed like an alarmingly big learning curve because the minutes weren't there. And when we saw him on the floor, you have that sort of classic new to the program, not quite comfortable playing in the pack line, look on his face, for lack of a more clear explanation. That it was probably something a lot like that, getting used to it. Anyway, things have seemed to come together for Jordan Miner. It's been a huge difference. Not that, Buchanan was playing poorly, or that Groves is playing poorly. You can't really play Groves at the five for most teams. You can't play Ryan Dunn at the five for a lot of teams, or you don't want to. And they just needed an experienced body to come in and if not start and lead the team at this position, at least provide valuable minutes. The team wasn't getting that. Well, now he's become the de facto starter, really, for it, and the team is clearly better for it, both defensively, because we've seen him body dudes one-on-one do well. We've seen the rebounding for the team do significantly better. I don't know if it's statistically significant, but it looks a lot better, at least when he's been playing. And we've seen it offensively convert to a nice attack off that side's rolling action, and finishing at the lane. If he could make 80% of his free throws instead of what seems like 50%, he'd be even more of a threat. It seemed like the last couple of games for Miner, when every time we went to the line, you're like, well, one's going in and one isn't. I don't have the stats to back that up, but that's what it felt like to me.
It
Anyway,
was what,
it's been
3 for 6 with
enormous.
3 1-for-2s last
Right.
night, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. It just like, all right, well, we're gonna get a point out of this. But small sample size, could easily turn around for sure. But regardless, like I said, both sides of the floor, it's been an immense impact for the team, and I'm sure it's no coincidence it's led to two wins against two decent enough teams. The Hokies might be more than decent, and like you said, Georgia Tech has a couple studs, and at this point we'll take any road win as a decent win. So with that, with Miner, I mean, anything to add about what this impact has been?
Yeah, and watching Miner play, you can definitely see some of the limitations. I mean, he misses shots around the rim that you'd like him to make. The free throw percentage is obviously an issue. He's actually at 67% on the year, which doesn't sound very high, but would be the highest percentage he's shot in his career. He's at 59% last year on 7 attempts a game. So the 1-for-2 might just be who Jordan Miner is as a player at this point. But he brings a ton of positives. I've loved what I've seen with him rim running. He does a great job at finding, but in semi-transition, but also in the half court, he brings an explosiveness attacking the basket that you'd expect to see from a guy who like Blake Buchanan, who's taller and bouncier. But Buchanan struggled with his hands on the roll inside, struggled to catch the ball, struggled to get it up around the rim, and then he's had the same free throw issues. But Miner plays really aggressively, rolls hard. And just seems like he knows where he's supposed to be. I was astonished when I look at the box score last night and saw he only had 2 rebounds because it felt like he had way more than that. But even without finishing the possessions with the rebound, he does a great job blocking out, great job sealing guys. And I
Right.
think
If
it's
he can
evident,
seal
and that
guys,
the issues have disappeared with him on the court.
Dunn gets the
Like,
rebound because he's sealing the guy who previously was preventing Dunn from getting the rebound.
And Virginia's always been a team that really emphasizes team rebounding like that. Like they're not going to care about the individual stats. It's all about the box outs. That's why they play the slowest pace in the country, because they're worried about slowing it down and securing defensive boards, which is why the offensive rebounds are so painful, because typically teams, if they have to crash the glass, they're giving up some vulnerability in transition. But if you're letting teams crash the glass and not penalizing them by pushing the ball up ahead, that's how you get blown out, like Virginia's done on the road so many times. But yeah, Miner's competence has just been, I think competence is probably the right word for
That's a
it.
good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's gone a long way for helping not turn around the season because these aren't great teams that they're playing, but it's certainly helped. He's been a steadying presence for them
For
in the
sure.
front court.
And they really haven't gotten into like what you would consider the meat of an ACC slate, at least to begin the year. Obviously, they haven't played UNC or Duke yet. I think we all thought State could be there. And right now, if you look, yeah, State is technically second in the conference. They do not look like the second best team in this conference to me. So anyway, they've got Clemson, they've got Miami. Like they've got a lot of probably upper, third programs in this conference list left to play. So at the very least, you have a chance in front of you to build more resume wins if you beat some of the better teams in the conference. And that's all we can ask is that they string some more wins together to get back up to the, where we would like to see them in the conference. Talking rebounding, I don't want to not say that both McNealy and Groves have really stood out to me in their rebounding. I think Groves more consistently through the season has really shown that he will get after it fighting guys to try and get the ball. Like we just noted, if you have someone like Minor sealing a box out for the other guy's main guy, that's going to help the guys who are hustling after the ball get there. So yeah, it is all complimentary for sure. The other face, of course, that's returned for the Hoos is Dante Harris coming off the bench as a guard that, they probably don't win the Virginia Tech game without him, at least. We didn't see quite as many minutes in Atlanta as we did for him against the Hokies. And also the stat sheet doesn't really pop out to you for Harris, but playing the other guy really well isn't a stat that you can quantify. And of course we see it and the importance of it particularly against Virginia Tech, because obviously you can't leave Padula any space or room. And then if you only have one guy capable of doing that, that leaves Hunter Couture wide open, which they got punished for on both ends throughout that game because those are both really, really strong players. But to be able to match those two dudes up against Beekman and Harris at a lot of points in the game, that was really, really valuable for the Hoos.
Yeah, and watching Harris play, he's a player who just stands out every time he makes a play. Like he's a little showy. That pass he threw in the Virginia Tech game where he strung out their big man and hit Jordan Minor on the roll and did a little 360 as he threw the pass. That was awesome. He finished with what, 5 points, five assists that game, and then just 4 points in the Georgia Tech game where I didn't remember him really playing much in the second half in that game. But just having him, he brings such a different element, a burst, a quickness, which Virginia just, I guess Elijah Gertrude might have it, but he's not there yet as a ball handler. Dante Harris, right now, with the way he can handle the ball, in addition to his quickness, is that guy that you need to bring a change of pace off the bench. He's a very effective defender, as you mentioned. He does a good job staying glued up on guys. TBD on pack line, I don't think we've seen enough of him to know if he's totally locked in with the system, although you see him by the fact that he's playing and the fact that he transferred early last year so we could have an extra semester to acclimate. Like
True.
he's had time to adjust. And if that's a problem at this point, it's probably pretty concerning, but there's no reason to believe that right now. And just having him as another option to put in there, I think Virginia was looking thin without him in terms of ball handlers. We saw it against teams that brought full court pressure, and Virginia, outside of Reese Beekman, just didn't have anyone who looked comfortable handling it. Well, Dante Harris is at the very least that. And as you mentioned, especially against Virginia Tech in his first game back. And I think he's a guy who likes playing at home too, in front of the fans. He likes playing with the crowd, but he's really fun to watch. He probably won't be playing 30 minutes a game or anything, but he's going to be an important contributor if they're going to keep this turnaround going.
Absolutely. I think it's funny you mentioned the playing to the crowd a little bit. Obviously, all the guys get hyped and like the home crowd, and we've got a great home crowd. And the students being back was huge for that hockey game. But I would say both Minor and Harris were probably the top two, or at least two of the top three. Like they clearly visibly are feeding off the energy and the excitement from the crowd. So it's funny that those two spark plugs are clearly spark plugs with that reason, right, too. You bring up Gertrude, and I think that's going to be a big question that people have going forward, right? Like, where's this? We see flashes of his ability. It's exciting to see this freshman who can clearly jump out of the building, and a guy that we're hoping is a really impactful part of this program in future years. And then you're going, okay, well, now he's not getting any minutes, and there's a time crunch from Harris. I'm not concerned. I haven't interviewed Gertrude or anything. I hope he's not concerned. I mean, it's sort of part of being a freshman on a basketball team, right? Like, there's only so many minutes to go around. But I wonder if you'd speak a little bit,
Yep.
Ben, to other issues you saw with Gertrude's game that lead to this. Is it just I would say that the counterpoint, if you're going to pick Harris at it, is like, clearly we could use spelling Reese time here, right? And getting
Yeah.
Harris back helps with that. But I mean, he played so many minutes, of course, against the Hokies and was very much needed, obviously, but that's not a tenable thing. So, why isn't so far in these two games, why haven't there been 6 minutes for Elijah Gertrude?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's as simple as Dante Harris coming back and just being the second guy in that point guard rotation. I don't think it's an indictment of Gertrude. Gertrude, I think when he played, was a mixed bag. You could obviously see the talent, the athleticism when he was getting to the basket. He was pretty effective, I thought. Like, he wasn't making any brilliant passes, but he ran the offense about as well as you could expect from a true freshman getting put out there. The shot leaves something to be desired. He was 1 for 11, small sample size, but it didn't look that much better than 1 for 11 when he was taking them. A few air balls, a few bad misses. And defensively, he was competent. Again, you saw flashes of the playmaking. When you watched his high school film, what stands out is a lot of the defensive plays. He was getting up to block shots that it just doesn't look like a point guard should be able to block. And we saw flashes of that. But I can see why Tony Bennett right now, he's a guy who's always going to coach to win the next game. And I think right now it's almost confidence in Reese instead of a lack of confidence in Gertrude. I think he just wants Reese on the court as much as possible. He plays 77% of Virginia's minutes, and Tony would probably have that number higher if he could. I mean, as we saw with Kihei Clark, when he has a veteran point guard, Tony trusts to run the show. They're going to be on the court as much as they can. So I think it's just as simple as there's Reese and then there's a backup point guard who runs the show and Reese is out. It was Elijah Gertrude while Dante Harris was hurt. I mean, they gave McNeely reps doing that. I think that pretty clearly wasn't working right after the Harris injury. So they're like, all right, we'll give Gertrude a chance. They burned his red shirt and he filled in, I thought, pretty well. But I don't think you can blame Tony for riding Dante Harris instead. I think Harris is probably a better basketball player right now, which isn't saying anything about their potential, but Harris is older and has more college basketball experience and probably executes the offense a little bit better. In terms of transfer stuff, people have been speculating about that. I have no idea as to that. I don't feel like this is an uncommon situation to have a guy play and then replace the guy who's injured, and then the guy who's injured comes back and starts playing again. I think if not for what had happened last year with Shedrick, Cafaro, and Isaac Trout is the big one,
Trout, right.
because people are drawing a lot of parallels between the Trout situation and this
Right.
situation with Gertrude. I don't think I don't see it.
Right. Well, and also it's not a UVA thing. Like, there's just so many transfers now across basketball. Like, it's a common thing to think about. And if you're thinking about it, then you're going to be tweeting or posting on a message board about it. So no reason to for anyone to panic other than it's just anyone who isn't getting minutes at any program, people are going to say this about. So who knows? We'll see. But at the rotation rate is at a solid 10 people these last two games. Again, the sample size is relatively small, right? You get Harris back, you feel comfortable with Minor. These are new things just two games into this new development for this roster. So we haven't seen larger than 10 men rotations very often in the mix of ACC play under Tony Bennett that I can recall. And the 10th guy right now is 3 minutes a game for Tane Murray. So if you as a coaching staff are saying, okay, we want to get Tane some run here and there, what you're asking for that rotation spot is things that Tane Murray brings, which are probably not the going to line up with things that Elijah Gertrude brings. So that's almost an answer right there. It's like clearly they're looking for some experience, a little bit of size, get aboard, hit down a shot, the things that we've seen Tane do in his limited minutes. So that's what they want. Well, I don't
And
know.
Tane's credit, Tane did make a pretty good play before the half yesterday, just
Oh
running out,
yeah.
making that layup.
Oh
Oh,
yeah. You're going, wait.
that
He knows not to pick up the ball, right? Like it's rolling. And then
was big.
I was a little nervous that he wasn't gonna have time, but he went straight to the rim and got it off, finger roll essentially before the buzzer went off. And yeah, great play. The other guy in this rotation that we haven't talked about, who I feel like is getting maybe this year's award for fans are frustrated with and asking why is he on the floor so much, is Andrew Rohde, right? And it's not that I'm trying to come in and agree with those fans or condemn Rohde's play. I think it's had ups and downs. And I honestly, we could lead off with a really strong part with how comfortable he looked in the last game against full court press. You heard the announcers talking about it a number of times in the second half, but being that outlet guy to that to receive the pass upon the first double after the inbounds pass and doing so very well and very comfortably. Something I think he's been in that position in a lot over the season to maybe different levels of comfort or at least appearing that way. And I thought the success in Atlanta from it was really strong and obviously really helpful for the team. So let me start there and give some flowers before maybe we point out reasons why the fans are up in arms on their keyboards about Rohde's minutes. But we've seen in and out of the starting lineup as a shakeup, what with this new depth coming back from Harrison putting in Minor and wanting, of course, to keep Groves with some really strong minutes, even though he might not be necessarily in the not that Rohde Groves play the same part, right? But it's all this balance of minutes and getting time for the guys that you want. Anyway, if we call this a new era of ACC play now, right? That Harris is there and Minor is a guy that the coaching staff is trusting to get these minutes or even starters minutes. Where do you see Rohde playing out? Like, what are the coaches looking at, and what role does he fit into? I think the obvious answer to what do we want more from is knocking down the open shots. But what is he doing well? Like, what is he bringing to the team that is leading to these starter minutes or just strong minutes off the bench?
Yeah, so in terms of the positives, I think he executes really well by just being in the right spot on both ends of the floor. I think he does what they want him to do in mover blocker, and I think he's grown into his own a little bit as a passer, particularly. He's thrown some nice skip passes, or not skip passes, slip passes to Big Ben over the past few games. He's averaging 3 assists per game versus one turnover, which honestly, as the second guy who's not really seeing a lot of the ball in a position to play make, is pretty impressive. And that's what you want to see, is he's not turning the ball over, he's not making dumb mistakes, and he's not overwhelmed in that capacity. And defensively, we've seen him hold up pretty stoutly in a way that's impressive for a guy transferring in from St. Thomas and the Summit League, coming up to major jump in terms of athleticism, in terms of quality of opposition. And I think you'd be hard pressed to argue that he's been a negative on the defensive end. He's not ever going to be making plays the way Reese Beekman is, the way Ryan Dunn does, but he certainly holds his own. And I don't think teams have really been able to take advantage of him on that end.
Sure.
Now, all this is beating around the bush a little bit, because the real problem is the shot, as you've mentioned, and the numbers are really, really, really ugly. It's 33% from the field this year, 26% from three, and 30% from the free throw line, which,
It's just
just
those,
like reading
especially
those,
those
it
last
reminds
two.
me almost, that's like the 26 and 30 are just outrageous,
Yeah.
outrageously low for a college basketball player. It almost reminds me of the first Casey Morcell year, where you would look at his 3-point percentage and just think, that can't be right. It can't possibly be that low. But then you watch the games, and that's what it looks like. Against Virginia Tech, he was 0 for 4 from the field. Against Georgia Tech, he was 2 for 6. So that's shooting 20% from the field in these last two games. And from when I watched him in a St. Thomas, games. It's actually interesting because him and Jordan Minor, actually, of all the players on the team, averaged the most points per game last season with their old teams, Minor at Merrimack and then Rhodey at St. Thomas. He averaged over 17 points per game. The big differences were number one, against worse competition, Rhodey could get to the rim. I think we've seen some of his like crafty around the basket, sort of pump fake, bank shot type game in the short mid-range, that 8 to 12 foot area. He just hasn't been able to get that going yet this season. We haven't seen it. And I think a lot of those shots have been exchanged for those 16 foot off the dribble mid-range jumpers, which are further from the basket, not in rhythm, tougher looks. I also think his jump shot from three, which he really let it fly last season. He was taking six threes a game, only at 32%, but he was taking some high degree of difficulty shots. But the concern was that his release is a little bit slow, and so he has a hard time getting it off against higher level defenders. And I think the book's out on him a little bit. You just have to stay up on him, take away his shooting rhythm. The one hit he had against Georgia Tech, that three he made, that guy was playing off him 5, 10 feet almost, and almost daring Rhodey to shoot it. But we haven't seen an ability to shoot off movement, to knock down spot up threes consistently. And I think he just doesn't feel comfortable getting his jumper off against more athletic defenders who are closing out more quickly than he's used to. I think he's doing what he can right now, and I appreciate that I think the staff is doing the right thing, continuing to play him. This is the flip side of the Gertrude argument, by the way, is would you rather Gertrude be playing every game and shooting 20% from three, and then you'd be complaining about him and wanting Dante Harris to come in? Like, either that's what happens when you let guys try and play through this. I mean, Rhodey's a sophomore, and I see why they're giving him extended run. He has size, he is where he's supposed to be, and he contributes in all the ways that aren't actually putting the ball in the basket. But it's worth, when they get into the real meat of the schedule, if teams are able to continue playing off him and treating him almost like a non-shooter, I think that Virginia they might benefit from cutting back his minutes a little bit just to go with guys who can bring a little bit more offensively. I don't know if that's Dante Harris. I don't know if that's Mortain Murray. They really don't have any options at that spot, which is the other issue. Like, where do you go? But I mean, it's everything besides the shooting has been all right, but the shooting has been worse than I think anyone expected coming in.
Well, and hopefully, I guess the silver lining maybe is it's a easy opportunity, you know, if he can get back to hopefully converting those a little bit more, then all the more valuable his minutes will become for the Hoos. Leon Bond, I mean, you could say, okay, well, what does he bring if you slide in there? Obviously, hustle, rebounding, athleticism. It doesn't look like shot making. He likes to let it go. He looks confident, Leon, when he gets the ball, like you know, which there's something to be said for that in an offense that seems to get bogged down in not being confident and passing up an open look for the better shot, you know, or like hoping the next guy will be the one to take it sometimes when they go through these scoring droughts. We just haven't seen that, you know, Leon's going to be able to play that role and convert the shots that we would, or take the shots that we would want to see converted too. I don't know. That's an anti-Bond thing too, but like you said, it's not a clear answer. Oh, well, just give those minutes to Bond and we'll be all the better because he'll hit, you know, clearly there isn't a sure replacement there. So we'll probably see them both rotate and both contribute, and maybe they both start hitting a little more, and then we're looking good that spot.
Hopefully. Bond is also a little bit of an awkward fit with this roster, I feel like, just because he almost has the Jaden Gardner problem where he can create his own shot and he can get you a look, but typically that look is coming either somewhere around the rim or in the mid-range. And it's really like it's isolation moves right now. Or when he's catching, it's like off the dribble. He's able to score when he's in those little two-man actions, popping, taking mid-range jump shots, but he hasn't really shown inability to be a connective piece in the offense. Like, he's not making touch passes, he's not moving the ball very well yet, which you don't have to expect that from him. It's perfectly fine for a freshman to just be good at scoring the ball, but it's easier to plug a guy like Rhodey, who doesn't need the ball in his hands quite as much, in over Bond, who really only contributes when he's touching the ball. So I think that might be the case for it, even if Bond is a more advanced scorer than Rhodey right now.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. Let's close up looking at the schedule, right? We started in the beginning saying that they have State coming to town, which you hope is a winnable game and a little bit of a revenge, but also gets you back into that conversation of putting State at 5-3 and you, Virginia, at 5-3, trying to just, I guess the goal is always finish in that top four, of the conference. It's funny, I don't know what builds out the percentages of ESPN's predictor, but that's just who I happen to be looking at right now. And their matchup predictor is 72% the Hoos on Wednesday. It's just funny because they got blown out by State and Raleigh, but State is not that good and also just looked just all over the place against the Hokies, who they lost to this weekend. So I guess the analytics there in the ESPN predictor are saying this is Virginia at home, and Virginia at home is playing really well. So it's probably as simple as that. But if they can win that game at home, then Virginia is going on the road, and we know what that's like. But they've done well. But it is Louisville, who you would hope is beatable, and then they host Notre Dame, who, yeah, kicked the crap out of them in South Bend, but Notre Dame is not very good. And again, it's Virginia at home. So point being, if you can beat this NC State team and then beat two bad teams in the way that you would want to hope Virginia can do, then they're all of a sudden 7-3 and maybe calming down any of this chatter of, oh, this is an NIT year. Obviously, it still could be, even if they are 7-3, I know. But more importantly, this ridiculous chatter of Tony Bennett's system can't work in the NIL deal, as if NIL, which of course, here's my soapbox. NIL has changed, right? Like, that's a big change for collegiate athletes. How are people out there saying NIL isn't being used for the UVA men's basketball team? Are you not listening or reading anything involving Virginia athletics? Every other advertisement is the Good Feet store, Isaac McNeely or Reese Beekman for Hardee's or whatever it is. I don't know, I don't like, they're clearly in commercials. Everybody who knows anybody about this program is replying to this chatter with, yeah, their NIL deals in place for the basketball team does pretty well. Like, these guys are getting compensated for their name, image, and likeness. Like, I just can't wrap my mind around the roster is never going to have the talent because Tony won't play the NIL game because Tony is a guy who values, morals and responsibility and doing the thing. That has been Tony Bennett since he stepped foot here, and college basketball players have been getting paid by coaches and programs that want to pay them for 50 years or more at this point. And that's never been Tony Bennett wanting to do it illicitly. So we've never been able to recruit guys. It just is nonsense. It's just absolute nonsense. And so hopefully stringing some wins together quiets some of the nonsense, is my point, Ben. I don't mean for you to need to
It
respond
is
to any of that,
ridiculous.
but yeah, go ahead if you would like
I mean,
to.
like, I don't know what people expect. Like, Virginia is not going to be Miami out here with like cryptocurrency graduates dropping $400,000 on Nigel Pack. But also, Miami has a worse record than Virginia right now. And there are 362 other teams in college basketball that also aren't doing that. And sure, the Dukes, the UNCs, the KUs are going to go get guys with NIL, but they were already doing that
And they were
before
already
all of
taking
this got
everybody they
legalized.
wanted.
It's not.
We've never beat them for a recruit. Like, I just, oh
Yeah, this
goodness.
is not a new problem. The only real effect, like the one guy who I think it actually did affect, if people remember Lyndon Johnson when Virginia was recruiting them, I think because of the G League program that was able to pay him a salary because of the new programs that have been established. But also, at the same time, does anyone have a problem with college athletes getting paid? Like, I just don't understand the mental gymnastics you have to do to get into a place where somehow Virginia is taking a righteous stand, but also being dumb and bad by not I don't know, going out and buying college basketball players. It's so weird. And yes, to your point, as someone who lives in Charlottesville, yeah, there is a whole lot of NIL sponsorships going on right now. Like,
Yeah,
it's every other
gosh.
advertisement if you walk around.
Yeah.
They at the basketball game a few weeks ago, they passed out Isaac McNealy Good Feet Store posters to everyone. Like, that's what NIL is.
Right,
Yeah.
exactly. I guess
People just can't shake the idea of NIL is when some shady Adidas guy hands you a check for
Right.
$500,000 and gives you a new car. Like,
Right, right,
and that's
right.
not what it is for almost every single program in the country.
UVA is
Like,
not going to go out and say,
grow
we're going to
up.
give you $500,000 if you commit to UVA. And they've never done that. They're not going to. And the teams that are doing that now are the teams that were already doing that beforehand when it was illegal, and we're still we're going to lose those recruits too. So I guess to play devil's argument, you could say because of NIL, more recruits are going to think that should be an option for them. But it's pretty easy to turn and say, here are the NIL deals that our current players have. Clearly, if you come here, we're going to be able to funnel you into similar types of sponsorship. I don't have the spreadsheets or anything like that, but it's ridiculous to get on the internet and bitch about Virginia basketball not embracing NIL. They're doing the normal thing that most, like you're saying, most programs are going to, and they're never going to do the abnormal Adidas drop the bag thing that the same programs that have been doing it for decades are going to continue to do. So it should be as
Yeah,
simple as that.
it's a non-starter. And
Anyhow,
even like,
hopefully we're 7-3 next time we're talking about like after these 3 wins, or we'll be back, of course, before 3 games are done. So hopefully we're talking about wins over state and then on the road at Louisville and previewing what hopefully would be a win against Notre Dame. But I would say if other than rooting for the Hoos, you're looking around the ACC and going, Carolina looks pretty good. I think we sort of know how to beat Carolina, right? They're talented. They're clearly the best team in the conference, especially after Duke's embarrassing loss of Pitt at home last night. But Virginia playing well can beat any of these teams. We've seen it 1,000 times before. I think we know. We want the team to play closer to their ceiling. We know what the ceiling is, and hopefully there's some reason for optimism that we can get back towards that ceiling this season. And if not, then we'll be back to the reasons for pessimism. But hopefully the floor is still higher than what it seemed to be a couple weeks ago
Yep.
when the sky was falling on the program.
Sky
So
is no longer falling.
hopefully we'll see.
Yeah. I'm excited to see how they play against NC State. That's the one I'm looking forward to because
For
I think
sure.
their coverage on DJ Burns was like killed them last game, specifically sending the doubles and giving up the open spot up threes. And that was before the Jordan Minor Renaissance. So
Good
we'll see
point.
if anything changes there.
And the
I
3-point shooting for State, hopefully we
It'll
can.
cool down.
Yeah, exactly. And Harris can help mitigate some of that. And not doubling Burns leads to fewer wide open threes. It's all like we were saying, it all plays together. So we'll be back to talk about that. Hopefully it's a W. Go Lions today. I'm gonna put this out after that, so you can laugh at me if they've lost to Tampa Bay. And you're listening to this now. But until next week, stay tuned to streakingthelawn.com for some excellent articles while Zach is away in Florence. I didn't mean to say that to imply, but anyway, you know what I mean. All right, go is. Talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.